Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Stacy Couch, author of Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. Stacy's a devoted shamanic practitioner, naturalist, archetypal consultant, and author. Has her calling in cultivating the sacred bond between humans and nature. She works as a publicist and journalist for the planet, empowering people with the ability to form a real connection with their own souls. As an answer to her lifelong yearning to help save endangered species, Stacy once accepted a position working on a lonely, abandoned island. Although she was there to help rescue a species of fox from the brink of extinction, it was a host of hawks that caught her attention. The encounter with these hawks was the start of the soul-searching quest that Stacy writes about in her extraordinary memoir. Stacy is a published scientific author and has a degree in ecology, evolution, and conservation biology. After years of working in the field as a professional wildlife biologist, Stacy turned to matters of the soul and became an avid student of spiritual healing and wisdom, taking a special interest in shamanism because of its nature-centric approach. She studied, most notably, with well-known author and shamanic teacher Sandra Ingerman. Stacy is also an ongoing student of the CMED Education Institute, founded by world-renowned author Carolyn Miss. Stacy is fortunate to count over a dozen other gifted healing practitioners as her teacher. She is both a certified shamanic practitioner and a certified archetypal consultant. She embraces all walks of life and is well-versed in many spiritual traditions. Pair this with her extensive expertise in animal biology and behavior, and you have a powerful combination of rational and mystical perspectives. Stacy is founder of Wild Gratitude, a shamanic practice that offers individual healing, spiritual consulting, and workshops. Wild Gratitude is also an online resource with a wellspring of information on animal symbolism. You can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.wildgratitude.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Stacy to the show. Good day, Stacy.
Hello. Hello, Robert. How are you?
I am doing very well, boy. As I kind of just mentioned to you briefly before we came on air, I just love your pictures and a photo. I mean, a journalist and publicist for Mother Nature. That is my kind of person. You know, I love that. That's wonderful.
Yep. Yeah, so, I feel very lucky to do what I do.
Yeah, it's, you know, and obviously you have a wonderful eye for bringing out, you know, when I look at those pictures of the animals that you have on your website, to me, it's like you capture the essence of that animal. And to me, that's a wonderful, I mean, that's what the whole symbolism, I think that's what the whole nature has to show us.
Yeah, they're different imprints and characteristics that they can bring is what makes life so interesting. Yeah, when we go out and see all of the variety that there is in nature, it's pretty amazing.
It is. So, well, let's just start right off with Gracious Wild. What is this book about?
It is about my experience working out on an island, like you talked about in the introduction. That's where the book starts out. It's starts out with me as a scientist working out on an island by myself and meeting some hawks that are wild on the island. And at the same time, I started to have a series of dreams and inner questioning on my spiritual path, and what my experiences were with the hawks in the daytime mirrored what was happening in the nighttime for me. And so I continued on along that path and actually moved out of the scientific field and learned about a shamanic practitioner and started learning about shamanism in general. And that really opened up a whole another world for me. And around the same time, I then met two hawks that were in a raptor education program trained to work with people. So I actually volunteered and helped take care of and train those hawks while I was learning about shamanism. And so those two, the daytime and then the dreamtime experiences, were mirroring each other, and there was a lot of synchronicity and coincidences that flowed in and out. So the book really goes through a lot of those, and then also explains a lot about shamanism and also just coming out of the rational, logical mind and into the mystical, intuitive mind.
Wow. You know, I mean, I love the dream state. And to me, when I think of shamanism, you know, I often think a shamanistic journey, you know, is very much like a waking dream in a way. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that I think those two worlds just kind of coexist and overlap to a great degree.
Yeah, and so it sounds like you've had the experience of either going on or having someone do a shamanic journey for you then.
Well, yeah, I don't know if I would necessarily put it in the shamanic, but I do have a very active and a very vivid dream activity. I mean, it's one of those things that, So I don't know if it's so much, you know, nature based. I mean, with shamanism, isn't that a focus really much of it nature-based, you know, the interaction with people in nature and what nature has to show us?
Yeah, it is very much so, especially for where my emphasis is. So shamanism is a really large field and has a number of specialties within that field. So there are some people that work more with angels or more with energy or light healing in shamanism. Mm-hmm. But I came into shamanism already with a very nature-centric worldview. So I carry that with me in my shamanic practice and work with a lot with power animals and nature spirits as well. So, yeah, that is a big part of it for me, but not every shamanic practitioner. And that's what I like about shamanism, is because, you know, it really is a container and a practice and a worldview that can be infused with whatever culture or calling someone who's practicing it is drawn to.
No, I like that description as a container. That's a wonderful way of looking at it. As far and you kind of, whatever goes into the container is unique to the individual. So
yeah, exactly.
Well, what inspired you to write this book? I mean, obviously being alone on an island has to have been quite an experience.
Yeah, I knew ever since I was very young that I wanted to write a book in this lifetime, at least one at some point, and I didn't expect it would be a memoir. I'm not an especially, I grew up and was pretty introverted. As a scientist, most people don't follow that career so they can get out and be on stage, right? Especially a wildlife biologist. You're out in the woods and away from people, right? So I really didn't expect I would write a memoir. But what was happening when I was living on the island and then when I was back on the mainland and volunteering to work with those hawks was just there were so many fascinating dreams coming, and then I learned how to do shamanic journeys, and the images in the journeys were mirroring what was in my dreams, which was also matching what was happening during the day, and it was all flowing together in such an intricate tapestry that was so fascinating to me, I had to catalog it. I was compelled to write it down, and I just kept my own journals and really didn't think of any of it much beyond that. But about a year or so kind of after I went through this Eye of the Needle or our new window into a new world, I woke up one morning. My husband and I had moved across country so that I could go to a shamanic art school, and we were looking for a place to live, and he was looking for work, and I just started a new job in a new school. And so it was really in a transition time, not in a time to settle in and start writing a book. But I woke up one morning, and all the chapter titles were in my head in the exact order you see them now in the book. And so that's when I knew that I either, you know, I needed to write it down then and start and get going at it, or it was going to pass me by. So, and really, that's kind of the outside explanation of what happened. But the two hawks that I had a special relationship with in the book, both Talia and Grasha, they really gave their lives over to the story, and it was them and for them that I and the wild animals that I wrote the book ultimately.
Yeah, well, you know, I can understand the first of the idea of a memoir. You know, for people out there who, you know, kind of venture into the world of writing, you know, and quite often the memoir is is one of those areas where you can go and you can talk about and your life experience is unique, you know, and to me, you know, it's the ultimate expression of one's life. I mean, you're here, this is what your example, this is what you live through, these are the circumstances, these are the things you learned, these are the things that you want to share. You know, so I can certainly understand, you know, the content, you know, behind a memoir, and but then again, it's also can be a little bit frightening in a way, because you're kind of putting yourself out there, you know, this is me, this is what I did, this is my experiences, and you kind of leave yourself open for all kinds of critiques, you know. But it sounds like, you know, for you, the ultimate goal of, you know, telling the story of the hawks and your journey, and kind of maybe raising awareness of nature, you know, nature's role, you know, in our life is really what was a motivating factor, kind of overrides everything else.
Yeah, and that really was the motivating factor. And now that the book's out there, and that I've been working with more and more people and talking to people as they read the book, I'm really starting to see what a service it is to others as well. So the discomfort it's been for me and the fear that I've had to wrestle with in having it out there has been of service to other people, in that they've had it's given them permission to start sharing their stories too, because these encounters with animals, they seem really sweet or really amazing and captivate our imagination, but they don't go any further if we don't have the chance to share them and really start to explore them on a deeper level. And if we can share them with others and explore them on a deeper level and trust those experiences and trust what's happening and on our intuitive and on our spiritual life, then we have the opportunity to really start going deeper and also living more courageously and more of who we are. So I really am so much enjoying hearing the stories come in from other people that, you know, even though they haven't lived on an island, so many people have had amazing experiences with wildlife in one format or another. So.
Yeah, you can just learn so much from nature. Now, speaking of living alone on an island, I mean, how long were you there? And, you know, I mean, because some people, I think, would find it frightening, you know, to not being able to interact with other people, you know what I mean? And just that whole human contact kind of thing. And so for you, living there, you know, alone, what was that like, you know? And then, you know, is that something, not necessarily an island, but the alone time, is that something that you would recommend that people really kind of make a conscious effort to include in their life?
Yeah, the experience of living on the island, I was not prepared for that. at all. I had no idea really what I was in for. And I'm not, you know, I do the archetypal work now, and I'm really clear that hermit is not one of my archetypes. Someone who had the hermit archetype would do great out on an island. But for me, it was, yeah, very isolating and very, very frightening at times, because I had I would have to sometimes go on hikes to parts of the island where I had I had a radio to get back to the mainland, sometimes I'd have no radio reception. Cell phones, there was no such thing as smartphones at the time, and the cell phone reception was even worse than the radio reception. And any internet I had, mostly the internet was just for checking email, and there was only a few people I knew that were on email at that time. So I had very minimal contact with the outside world and with other people, which was really, really challenging for me, because it really left me alone with that voice, that mind chatter that we all know about but get to distract ourselves from with the busyness of our days. And most people go into learning mindfulness and being able to start managing that mind chatter or releasing it and going into the silence. Most people start with 5 or 10 minutes of meditation a day, right? And here I was out on this island. I was out there for 8 days at a time and was flown out on a plane, a 45-minute flight one way, landed on a dirt airstrip, and then was back on the mainland for 6 days at a time. So I did this on and off schedule for 10 months before I finally gave it up, because it was really challenging. I got married during the course of this time and really wanted to be with my husband and also wanted to have friends and all of those kind of things. Yeah, so it was really I call it an accidental vision quest. I didn't intend to actually have that part of the experience. I was really there to help save an endangered species, but I had a lot of spare time on my own, and I learned a lot about silence and a lot about listening, and really got the chance to open up the window into the other spiritual or mystical realms and get in touch with my guides and power animals. So that was really, I mean, there was so much of a gift to it, but it was incredibly challenging. It's not for the faint of heart. When you ask about, yeah, not at all. So when you ask about, do I recommend that people spend time out in nature? Most definitely. And it doesn't need to be as much as I did. But, you know, that's obviously up to the individual. But even time out with family or friends, walking out in the woods and doing so in silence. You know, it's interesting how we can only really practice silence with people that we trust. Otherwise, we're trying to fill the space with words. So, yeah, to be able to go on walks with loved ones and just be silent and listen to the birds and the trees and the wind or on our own, either one. And it doesn't even have to be in the woods. It could be at a park. It could be some time in your backyard, in your garden. Nature is all around us. It's just an illusion that we're separate from it.
Yeah, well, I'm an avid nature lover. I start every morning with a little nature walk and have my little camera in hand. And it's funny because you talked about, you know, the silence aspect or the quiet. Normally, when I walk, I would have my little iPad on and, you know, or iPhone on and with the music kind of shuffling along. But the last week, as I've been walking, the birds, the variety of birds that I've been hearing has just been, obviously it's spring, so we know what's up there. But I found that I've just had to really walk with that off, just completely, you know, listen and tuning into nature. Because to me, it was like I was missing something, you know, that noise, even though, you know, the music is nice, it's inspirational, kind of, sometimes it's, you know, that kind of thing. But to me, it was interference in a way, interfering with my little nature experience.
Yeah, and there's such a different pace in the natural world than what we usually have. It's a slower, oftentimes, you know, and more steady pace that can be really reassuring and soothing. I love music, too. Music's great, but it can really kind of impose a given tempo on our day or a given theme to our day, whereas with nature, we just have the chance to rest in the in the rhythm of the seasons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, speaking of slower pace, the last few days I live near in Myrtle Beach, where we've got like inlets and all kinds of things, and lately I've been seeing, you know, a lot of the turtles on the logs and that kind of thing. And every time I see them, it's like, okay, slow down. You know, it's kind of like the little message they're giving to me: slow down, chill out. You know, and one of them the other day, one was just like, its head was outstretched. You know, and it was just a sunny day, and I mean, it was like the legs were completely on this log, and to me, it was like sunbathing. And I just thought, oh, that was the funniest thing. You know, it's like just taking in, you know, taking in the day. And I mean, and that, you know, I got that message. To me, it was like, okay, so I decided that I was just going to take a, you know, a good hour just to sit there and absorb, you know, what was going on around me. So
yeah,
that's
great. A perfect example.
Yeah, well, now what period of your life does this book cover?
It covers my early 20s. So it's just after getting out of college and thinking I had an idea of where I was going with my life. I was on the track to go get a master's and then a PhD and do some groundbreaking ecological research. And yeah, then everything kind of got thrown into whole questioning that I think a lot of people, at least by their late 20s, come into that kind of experience where it's like, oh, wait, where was I going? Am I sure this is really what I want to be doing? So, yeah, it does cover that. But it's interesting how we have cycles of that come throughout our life. So I talk to people of all ages, and it's so fascinating how we come into those times in our life where we thought we were going somewhere, and then all of a sudden something happens either slowly over time or all at once that causes us to question our direction. And that's when we stop and take stock and open up to possibilities we might not have thought of before, and then those possibilities start to come in miraculously. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. You wake up from a dream one night and say, oh, I'm going to be an author. So here we go.
Yep.
Oh, goodness. I'd like to take a few minutes here now and talk about the Hawks, because it's this particular one, you know, it's a shamanic journey with the Hawks, and you mentioned Thalia and Grasha. Mm-hmm. That's pronounced correctly, right? Grasha?
Yep.
Okay. Now, these particular Hawks, you were on this island. You had to fly 45 minutes to get to this island. So was it unusual that these Hawks inhabited the island? I mean, to me, it seems kind of synchronistic, you know, that here you are on an island, you know, working on, you know, saving. It was Fox, right? Fox from extinction.
Yep.
Yeah, and then you have these Hawks there. Were they like indigenous to that particular island? Or, I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Yeah, so Thalia and Grasha, those two, they were in a raptor education program at a wildlife rehabilitation center. So that was on the mainland, yeah. So that was kind of the second part of the book. And the first part of the book, when I was on the island, the foxes were the only captive animals there because we had them in a captive breeding program. But there were some hawks that flew out to the island from the mainland and were frequent visitors. So when you talk about indigenous, they were indigenous as far as much that they would visit the island. But there was no, and it was a species of hawk called northern harrier hawks, and there was no recording in history of them ever nesting on the island. So they'd only ever visited. And this one year that I was there, they started nesting on the island. I found three nests on the island and watched these families raise their young. And they were two of the nests were basically right next door to the cabin where I was living. So I had this very intimate experience of watching these families of hawks grow up, which was very amazing. And then when I finished that position and left and went back to live with my husband full time and be on the mainland, is when I started volunteering at a wildlife rehabilitation center. And they had birds that were hawks, owls, and falcons that were in captivity because they were handicapped, so they couldn't be released back into the wild, but they were still healthy and well to be ambassador birds. We took them out to schools and Girl Scout and Boy Scout groups to help raise awareness about the birds of prey and how integral they are to our ecosystem. And so Talia was actually the same species of hawk that was out on the island, northern harrier hawk, which makes it very rare. They're pretty rare to see in captivity, that species of hawk. So it was a pretty rare occurrence for me to run across one in a raptor education program. And then Grotto was a red-tailed hawk. Yeah.
Oh.
Yep. So that's where the big synchronicity comes in, is where I went to volunteer at this place and learn about what they do, and I saw Talia there, and I was like, oh, wow, that's the exact same species of hawk. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, wow. You know, as a matter of fact, red-tailed hawk is one of my best friend's little familiar. You know, I mean, it's one of those things that he is completely identifies with. With hawks, you know, what is it, do you think, that draws people into them? What, you know, I mean, they're amazing creatures, but, you know, is there something, just that whole bird of prey kind of aspect that maybe captures the people's imagination or attention?
Yeah, the hawks are, especially the red-tailed hawks, like you mentioned, and Grotto was a red-tailed hawk, and they are more commonly seen in falconry or birds of prey programs because they're way more gregarious and way more adaptable to the human world. They're kind of like the Labrador retrievers, I say, of the raptor world. They're friendly, and, you know, they're not going to come and rub on you. That's not hawk nature, but but they are they do acclimate very easily to a human environment. The red-tailed hawks are mostly what people see around and really resonate with. And they're so signature because of that red tail, right? We all know exactly when we see one what it is. And really, I think that one of the biggest things that helps us connect so much with hawks is that they're so conspicuous. We see them everywhere, and they're so big and so just beautiful, and how they can soar, or even just when we see them sitting, even just their presence, they sit there so stoically and calm. And then also, I think that symbolism of their vision, how focused they are and how intense of a stare they have, that is a very captivating thing for us, and a quality I think a lot of people really either wish for in themselves or admire, as in that ability to be focused on something and also be able to have great vision, to be able to fly above our lives and see our lives from a big picture or symbolic perspective. There's a freedom in that metaphor that the hawk offers us. And often hawks and mythology that I've studied, they are more like our messengers to the gods. It's almost like they carry our messages up to the heavens, where eagles are more often associated with the gods directly. So I think the eagles are more bringing messages from the heavens down to us. So it's an interesting, both are very commonly adored, I think. But I'm really surprised at how many people are really attracted to hawks and really feel a kinship with them. It's quite amazing.
It is. My goodness. Well, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick break. And I do invite anyone who's listening, if you would like to call in and ask Stacy any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. For those of you who are listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Stacy, feel free to type it in and we'll be sure to get to it. Stacy, right after the break, when we come back, there's one chapter in your book called The Mouthpiece, about a badly injured hawk and the message. So I'd like to, when we come back from break, kind of talk about what that message was, okay?
Okay.
Great. Okay, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And speaking of supporting our guests, definitely go ahead and purchase Stacy's book, Gracious Wild, and you can find a direct link to her book in our website, or to her website in our show page description. And from there, you can purchase her book. Her book is also available at Amazon.com. Again, my special guest today is Stacy Couch, and we are talking about her book, Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. And again, her website is www.wildgratitude.com. And again, there is a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, we're back. Stacy?
Yes, hello.
Okay, great. Okay, one of the last chapters, called The Mouthpiece, tells the story of a badly injured hawk. And would you mind kind of sharing with the listeners that particular story?
Yeah, I would like to just read a little bit. I think sometimes I get telling the story out loud, and then I love to go back sometimes and actually just read it straight from the book, because it takes me back there, and I think in a lot of ways it can take the reader back there too. So I'm just going to read about this meeting this hawk, just a couple short paragraphs here about meeting this hawk and what the experience was like. So we talked about Grasha and Talia, but while I was volunteering with them, I was also working as a veterinary technician at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. So I was helping a lot of different types of different species, birds, squirrels, all sorts of different things, rescued animals, helping them recover so they could be released back into the wild. So this is a story about one of those animals in particular that came in and really really made an impact on me, and I'll share more about how that is. But these people had found this hawk, this injured hawk, and called us to have us come bring it in. And they had made a nice cardboard box for the hawk to be in and cut little air holes or light holes in. So I had the opportunity to go and crouch down to peer inside the box that the hawk was in. The hawk's eyes barely met mine. The light of her spirit pierced the shadows of the cardboard surrounding her. I remained motionless, entirely transfixed. I'm not even sure that I drew breath. Those eyes, which we were talking about before, right, held so much light, so much life. She stood so strong and assured, but the whole picture was askew. This hawk was missing at least half of her upper beak. There was no way to imagine how this bird had survived the pain of the injury and the subsequent bleed out. I was staring into the eyes of the impossible, and I couldn't find my feet. Her right wing hung low. I figured she must have injured that too. So I go on to share more about how we did an exam on the bird to just assess her injuries and see if there was anything that we could do for her. And what we ended up finding is that along her keel, which is the chest bone, there was no flesh. She had no breast meat, you know, no muscle left on her body at all. There was no way that this bird should be alive, especially standing there and staring me in the face. And so that was really what had such an impact on me. We did have to unfortunately put her down because there was nothing we could do for her injuries. They were too devastating, and she was too far gone. But it was like having a message from the other side. She was like an omen, or I was like almost like she was walking dead, you know, that she had survived to that point to bring some sort of message through. And not that I thought I was the only one that could hear that message, but I didn't know who else was there to listen, so I thought that I would. And so I sat with it for a number of days with her presence and just that image and that experience of meeting this bird. And what I ended up coming to one day, we were driving along a windy road through the woods out to the Pacific, the Oregon coast, and then we had some time, some silence in the car. And again, I came back to thinking about her and had that question in my head, like, what was that about? What was she trying to say? And I don't often get messages in the form of words. You know, so we talk about messages from animals and we think about Dr. Doolittle and think that it's all going to be telepathic messages, right? That happens sometimes for me and other people I know. It happens all of the time. I get messages in all sorts of different formats. Symbolism, like we've been talking about, like your experience with the turtle is a perfect example of one of the primary ways I receive messages from animals. All that aside, this was one of the few chances in my life where I've gotten a really clear message. And I was sitting there with a question in silence, and I heard the word mouthpiece. And then I thought she didn't have a mouthpiece. And then what I heard come in was that the animals don't have a mouthpiece anymore. That's what she was representing, is that they don't have a way to speak to us anymore. They don't have a way to communicate with us anymore. And then next was the question, or was the request from this spirit or these spirits, was asking me to be the mouthpiece for them.
Wow, that's pretty profound.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And at the time, I was like, well, that's a great idea. What does that mean, right? What am I supposed to do with that? And then here I am today doing a radio interview with you. So it does all come full circle. But at the time, I had no idea what to do with that information. And but it stayed with me. And I've continued just down the path, and lo and behold, here I am helping share the messages of the animals. So
that's great. That's wonderful. Yeah, you know, and you know, like you say, there's just so much that can be learned. You know, and there's, I mean, here, you know, you're getting experiences and signs and, you know, dreams. You know, all of these things kind of guiding you to this particular point in your life now, where, you know, you've written your memoir, you've touched on a whole bunch of experiences. You're now, you know, a mouthpiece. You know, a journalist for Mother Nature. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things where it seems that, you know, nature has just given you kind of different signposts, you know, and you've walked, of course, along those paths. You know, you chose to follow those messages, you know, to be able to do what you're doing. But and that's wonderful. I think that it's great. We need more people to be able to really pick up the message and also kind of start that that communication with nature, kind of get back in sync, because we are so out of sync with nature right now. I mean, it's just, I think that's probably one of the biggest things kind of keeping the world off balance is our, I don't know, it's not ignorance in the sense of just not paying attention to what nature is telling us.
Yeah, awareness, right?
And I
think that it was really hard for me in the beginning when I first started coming into all this, because as a scientist, I to just think, well, my job is to go and speak about the symbology and metaphor guidance that comes to us from animals, right? It felt very initially very trite or simple, I guess would be a good word for it. But as my understanding of the spiritual path has deepened, and as my connection with people and nature has deepened, I've understood now that this is, you know, there's so many different spiritual walks. They're all the paths lead to God, right? As they say, or lead to the divine, depending on which word you use. But this this one, the path via nature, via connection with nature, it starts like any spiritual path with awareness. And so that's what I love is we can connect with nature on the mental level, emotional level, but to connect on a spiritual level, on a deep soul level, and have the animals be our gurus, essentially, there's no greater importance you can assign to anything than that, I really think, because that's what feeds our souls and drives us forward in life. And I think that's what's going to compel us to take better care of the world around us. Yeah,
I agree very much. One of the chapters also in your book is called On Healing Wounds. What is that about? Because it sounds like, you know, one of the aspects of, I think, that animals and nature can help us with is healing wounds. So what exactly does that chapter entail?
Yeah, it talks a lot about, so when I initially got into my shamanic practice, at first it was really exciting because I got to go during my waking hours on the same types of travels and experiences that I was doing in my dream time. And so I was getting to do these shamanic journeys at will versus just having to wait until I was asleep and hope that something came, right? So that was really exciting for me initially. But then as I started to dive deeper into the well, as I would say, I started to work in the realms of shamanic healing and really learning more about shamanism as a whole field. And so I learned it via direct experience, so I worked on myself initially because I didn't feel directed to do work for other people in the beginning. I was just interested in it for my own path and my own growth. And so I was really started to delve with the help of the shamanic practitioner that I was studying with at the time. With her help, I was really guided and nurtured and cared for through the process of going through some of those old woundings that come up when we decide to sit in the silence. You know, the mind chatter comes in or old memories come in and come up, and that's also, I think, part of the spiritual process. And because if we want to follow the path, like you were talking about, those signposts along the way, we can't follow the signposts unless we have the courage and the self-esteem and those kind of things to help us, you know, go along so that we can go along the path. And usually we don't have all of the things we need intact to follow those signposts. So that involves going back and picking back up those gifts that we might have left behind at other times in our life because of trauma or wounds that happened. So that chapter is a lot about when I really started getting into the deeper aspect of wounds from my past and how really hard that was to continue on the path and how really it was so helpful to have the companionship of those hawks at that time and nature in general and the animals because there's no judgment with them. You know, and we don't, and for me, I came into the world just hardwired to be comfortable and commune with animals. It was just, and I meet a lot of people that are the same way, that feel a lot more comfortable with our dogs or our cats or our horses or whatever pets we may have than we do with humans. And for me, I actually, part of the healing wounds for me was to heal some of my some humiliating moments for me in my life and in healing those, then learning new skills to communicate and interact with people and start to build community. And so actually in that chapter two, I start to make some friends that are also having similar experiences to me and that we're starting to share these kind of things that you wouldn't usually share with others, but that soul companionship was really helpful for me, both from the hawks and from the new friends I met at the time. So.
Yeah, very much. You know, as a matter of fact, you know, you talked you share a story in the book about a sexual assault that happened when you were in high school, and with April next month being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, you know, is one of those things that, you know, as a matter of fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine in the Bay Area who is working right now in that realm and helping women in particular transform, you know, that experience from a debilitating to an empowering kind of circumstance. So that has to have taken quite a bit of courage, you know, to be able to put that into a book and share that. You know, that's probably one of the most intimate types of experiences, you know, to share. Do you have any reservations about sharing that?
Yeah, I definitely did, and that's probably one of the parts of the book that I rewrote a number of times. Other parts just flowed, and that's what I wanted to make sure to come from my own experience and come as clean as I could with it, without any more anger or resentment left over, but just to tell the story and the rawness and the vulnerability that's there, because I know a lot of other people have similar stories to tell. And then I also feel like it really gets to some really intimate and deep aspects of how my relationship with Talia, the Northern Harrier Hawk, how she really was there to help me through that, because I was really struggling because it was something for 10 years that I didn't acknowledge for what it was, because he told a totally different story. than what my experience was. I didn't even have a chance to tell a story before he told the story. And his story was way different than my experience. And so I thought I must have had it wrong. And so for 10 years, I didn't acknowledge it for what it was. And part of going back and looking at those wounds was to go back through that experience and share it with other people and come to terms with what had actually happened. And then I was almost like, for people who have repressed experiences like that, I mean, I had a memory of it, but I just wasn't, had a different story about it. I had changed my story to match his, I guess I would say. For people who have had that kind of experience, they know how coming back into it and looking at it through a different lens at a different time in your life can actually be like a rewounding if it's not gone through in a supported fashion. It can, and even if it's not, it still can be hard to go through. So having Talia to go and spend time with, just me and her, and take her out on walks, just her presence alone was incredibly comforting, because I didn't have to explain to her what was going on with me or have any excuses for, you know, not being the smiling, shining, happy person that day. So that was, really pretty amazing. And I decided to share it just because, like you said, there's, you know, we've got, Sexual Assault Awareness Month next month. And I just think it's really important that we keep, those of us that have had these kind of experiences, that we keep it out there and out the awareness about it ongoing, so that it doesn't slip between the cracks or slip into the shadow. And I actually volunteer with a local victims assistance program, just because, I believe in the need to. Unfortunately, there's still a need to help victims and let people know the community is so important. Let people know that there's support and that they'll get through it. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and I fully agree with you as far as the importance of the awareness. I mean, when we look at in the news a couple of days ago, we had a frat who had the private Facebook page with really awful photos on it. I mean, it's something that it still permeates our society, you know, and it's quite often, hidden, in the sense that, people try to make sure that it's really, really not out there in the open. But, I mean, it affects so many people, and it's, to me, it's... it's a blight. You know, I mean, really, yeah. You know, there's, it's just one of those things that really needs to be addressed. So, well,
and I think the tough part about it is there's a gray area. There's no, you know, clear definition of this is or this is not, or you are a victim or you're not a victim. There's so many variations of the story, and it really comes down to the experience of the person, you know, the people that were there,
right.
and their truth,
right.
And how it was for them. Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Much so. Well, I think that it's very, like, again, courageous of you to do that. I think that it's, you know, more people like you sharing that and also showing that, you know, it hasn't prevented you from, you know, living a full and very wonderful life, you know, to kind of put it in its place is a great thing. So, now, one of the things that, we're down to like about 10 minutes here, so I want to talk just a couple more things about Gracious Wild and then also talk a little bit about some of the other things that you offer so people can get a good idea of what they can go to you for. What are some of the things that you have, what's been some of the responses from people who, you know, have read Gracious Wild? What are some of the things that, you know, maybe a story or two that kind of really sticks out in your mind as far as being extraordinary as far as, you know, the book, someone's response?
Yeah, one of the, you know, I get a lot of stories from either clients that I work with or people who've come to my book through various channels, and they resonate it with the book in a way that's very familiar to me, like I was sharing about before, how they have experiences with hawks and them bringing messages and helping them through tough times or giving them a sign at a very important moment in their life. And so I get a lot of stories like that. One of the stories that really sticks out with me is actually my brother-in-law. I'd never expected that he was going to read the book. And he emailed me out of the blue and said he read it and thanked me for it because it was really helping him, because he's in a point in his life where he's questioning, should he go out in the world and try to make a difference, or should he just, you know, kind of keep to himself and keep on in that way. So it's, there's some, that's the piece, the kind of more universal piece of coming into empowerment. So we were talking earlier about, you know, the experience of being a victim and rising out of that and becoming empowered. So I've had people really resonate with that part of the book in one fashion or another. And then also this questioning of, well, what am I really here to do? That's a universal question that we all ask. And I just love that the book speaks to that in people and gives them an opportunity to ponder that question for themselves some more, because I think it's a valuable question to sit with.
Very much so. Well, you know, I want people to know also, on your website you have a blog, and in that you have several articles about various spirit animals. I loved reading that. as a matter of fact, last Tuesday, a week ago, last Tuesday, I had an alligator show up. There's marshes around us, and I started my walk thinking, you know, I wonder, it's about that time the alligators should come out. It was a beautiful sunny day, and I know that the alligators in our little, you know, waterways love to sun, you know, on those kind of days. They get up on the banks, and I thought, you know, I'm wondering if we're going to see them this year. The last couple of years, I haven't seen as many. And then by the end of the walk, I actually walked over to one little marshy area, and there was one just sitting and wait. You know, he was just, and I was like, oh my God. So I usually share, you know, little nature pictures on Facebook with friends and that kind of thing. So snapped a picture of that, and my quote was, "Being primal in Myrtle Beach today," you know, and then I looked at your article there about the ancient alligator and about it being very primal, and I just kind of smiled. I thought, "Yep, that was a real clear message." But anyway, for those of you listening, go to that blog. It's really great. You know, I think that's a wonderful the information that you provide really, I think, helps raise awareness, you know, so that people encounter any of these animals that you mentioned in your blog, that I think maybe they'll start to do the little association as to some of the, you know, the meaning and interpretation that you provide. So I think that's a great way of raising awareness.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, I've got over 20 animals on there, and I'm continually adding to that. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I love doing it. I have a hard time having to stop myself at a blog post link. Some people might notice that. Some of them are a little longer than others because I just get studying the biology. No matter how much I know about the animal, I'll still go and study the biology one more time before I go and write that blog post. So it's and then I study a lot about mythology. There's a lot of mythology woven into there about different from all different cultures. It's fascinating. I could write a book about the symbology or metaphor about one animal. So it depends how deep we want to go. And I try to pick kind of one perspective or one angle, and then fill it in from there. But yeah, there's a lot of ways to go.
That's great. Well, in the last few minutes, I just want to let people know that the services you offer, you have shamanic healing services, is correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I do those long distance. The majority of the people I work with are by phone, actually. So no matter where anybody is in the country, they can we can work together by phone.
Great. And you also have the archetypal consulting. What exactly is that? We talked about, you know, that you're not necessarily the hermit archetype.
Yeah.
But
what
is that? And how would that – who would be a perfect person to use that service?
Really, anybody who's interested in knowing more about themselves and why they make the choices they do in their life. I help people pick their 12 natal archetypes, the archetypes that we came into this life with. And archetypes are images of a certain personality that we all know. So mother, father, king, queen, hermit, fool. It's kind of an endless list, but there's a lot of them. So when you say the word, you automatically have an image of what that kind of person is. You know, when you say mother, everybody knows what a mother is. So, yeah, artist, there's a whole host of them. So we go through those and learn about them and then narrow it down to the 12 and then cast that as a wheel. And then I help do a reading where we go through and we look at how each of those archetypes plays into our life, and then the choices we make, and also our purpose, the reason why we're here. So it's incredibly fascinating. It really aligns up with the spirit animal work, because the spirit animals are archetypes in a sense as well, in that they carry a certain energy or essence or imprint that we resonate with, the ones that we're working with, and that helps us express a certain thing. Like mountain lions are associated with leadership, and they would maybe be associated with the queen archetype, you know, so you can kind of go across in that way too. So I found that all weaves together really nicely in my practice.
That's great. Well, we're running out of time, so I just want to let people know they can also find out you do land and house blessings and wedding ceremonies. So you offer quite a bit. You also have classes. I noticed you have a couple upcoming in the next couple months in New Mexico and Longmont, so people can check those out, and also talks. So you offer quite a bit of services. So I you know, encourage people to go to your website. I mean, I had a lot of fun just navigating and reading all of what you had, as well as some of the articles that you had published. So it was great fun, Stacey. Also, do want to let people know that you're on Facebook, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
they can find out that by going to my website.
Great. Okay, and I have liked your page as well on Facebook. So I look forward to following your journey and nature. And I really want to thank you for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, I did too. Thank you so much. It was really great.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Stacy Couch. She is author of Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. Again, find out, go to her website, which is www.wildgratitude.com. Again, there is a direct link to her website in the show page description. Check it out. There's a whole bunch of wonderful information there. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.